you know, the purpose of AI is to be smarter, to be more efficient, to be more effective. And that's hyper-personalization. If you have a Netflix subscription, the personalizations have gotten better and better. And that's because of AI technology in there. What does that do, right? It saves you time from like just scrolling their vast content network. And that's honestly what made streaming so palatable for the masses, is because it is a time saver. It is the continuous flow of information. And that's what we're seeing with AI. It's giving us continuous flow of information that's perfectly suited for us.
Welcome to the Executive Connect podcast, a show for the new generation of leaders. Join Melissa R. Skog as she speaks to a wide variety of guests that bring new insights into leadership, prosperity, and personal growth. While no one has all the answers, by building a community of open-minded and engaged leaders, we hope to give you the tools you need to help you find your own path to success.
Welcome to the Executive Connect podcast. I'm thrilled to have Selena Acaro here today to speak with us on AI. Selena is the Vice President and Founding Practice Leader in Gartner's Executive Advisory Services, where she is responsible for $100 million in recurring revenue and the P&L. She has also worked at Accenture, AIG, BMC Software. Welcome, Selena.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
One of my favorite subjects to talk about is AI. I'm thrilled to just get started with talking about the monetization of AI. Can you discuss some of the effective strategies in monetizing AI in various industries?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, AI is this hugely, it's not a disruptive technology, right? AI is a complementary technology. It's making everything we do and do it more effective and more efficiently. So people stand to make a lot of money by implementing AI technologies. Some effective strategies for utilizing AI in order to monetize it is, first and foremost, you need to have some key performance indicators in place, right? So how are you going to actually use it is really, really important. So, you know, I always recommend to people, usage metering is really important. So how much has your usage increased by implementing AI LLMs? You know, how much more precise has your quoting and pricing gotten for your organization, and then forecasting demand of usage for your system? And then, you know, just your modern billing practices. So various ways that you're seeing from a consumer standpoint, though, you know, from monetizing AI is really, you know, I guess one of the best known ones is Bing, right? Microsoft purchased OpenAI and implemented it into their platform, into the Bing search engine. And what that did was, it allowed a hyper-personalization aspect to come into play. So most people don't realize this. Bing will now take your information that you put in and that you type in for your search and the things that you're interested in, and it will start hyper-focusing, not only making the search results more precise, but it will start hyper-focusing some of those banner ads that you have across the top, right? So that way your immersion is that much more specific and time savings. And that's a huge monetization play, because if they have the right ads coming your way, you're more than likely going to purchase the product that's coming. They're going to get ad revenue from that. And it just keeps paying it forward.
Yeah, I love all those pop-ups that I get. And it's true, because we're all guilty of clicking on ads that are, you know, tailored to us. I am absolutely guilty of it myself. And so although I do appreciate it too, right? It saves me from searching for things. And so it's both ways. You know, I love it because I'm getting what I need, but then I'm also like, do I really need those things that they're popping up and reminding me as well? So, you know, another side to AI, I think of like cyber risk and governance and compliance are really hot topics right now, along with, you know, monetizing AI. So from your perspective, what are some common risks associated with AI deployments, and how can organizations mitigate them when they're, you know, going through those migrations?
Yeah. So a couple of things. So first and foremost, I think the key thing around AI, right? It's a complementary technology again. So it's not well regulated yet, meaning that, you know, we don't know what we don't know about AI. So if you have a data rich environment, if you're an organization that produces a lot of data, understand that while you may be pulling data from AI, like it's also consuming your data. So, you know, how much of your IP do you want to give up? And, you know, how much risk are you comfortable with? And then from a consumer standpoint, how much of your personal information are you comfortable giving up? We don't have frameworks in place yet because the technology is so new to opt out on personalization. I mean, those are more static type of data requests. So, in terms of, you know, risks and governance, like one of the best ways I think to devise your governance structure is one, understand what you are comfortable sharing. So think about it from what you're comfortable sharing first, and you can devise your governance structure from that aspect. Like we don't want it to go on these systems, or we don't want to be allowing certain types of requests to come through, right? Because again, it's a pull, but it's also a consumption at the same time. To because it's making the engine smarter. That's how machine language works. The other thing too is if you're in, you know, it's based on where you're located, whether you're international or you're domestic, understanding what are some of the governmental regulations that are in place. And I think, like, you know, there's Biden's framework that he just put in place for AI security, and he put together a committee, but really understanding some of that. China has one. And so understanding those and how your business plays into that is a good way to determine what's the risk framework to put in place.
Yeah, well said. Kind of pivoting gears a little bit, you know, moving on to more consumer use of AI. I know I don't think there's a week that's gone by recently where I'm not asked by a CIO or somebody that's curious about ChatGPT. Like, how can we leverage these AI tools to enhance, you know, not only employee experiences, but customer experiences? Do you have any thoughts on how organizations can use AI like ChatGPT?
Yeah, so ChatGPT is actually a very wonderful product. Like I use it personally all the time. So like when I'm wondering about stuff, and it gives you much more precise interaction than Google. The other thing I think from a consumer standpoint is, it really does help with, grammar and writing. So, you know, when I'm creating, emails or, you know, documents, whether it's personal or professional, you know, I run it through ChatGPT a lot to like, you know, how would you say this? So, and not only does it help me, right? It then makes me smarter because then I'm seeing the usage and you know, the type of grammar it's using and how it's explaining things. And so it makes me a better writer. So, you know, so those are some really basic uses of ChatGPT if you need to update your resume, anything like that, right? It can give you some really great examples and help you with that. The other thing I really like some innovative AI applicant, like consumer companies that have utilized ChatGPT, or used it as the backbone for, you know, their AI powered support is like Tesla. So like when, you know, Tesla is probably the epitome of smart design and, innovative technologies. Well, you know, when you go to Tesla's website or you need to log in and speak with someone, you're actually talking with a bot that they've created, you know, from AI. And, same thing with Cardinal Health. So when you're actually, you know, going out to Cardinal Health to want to find the right doctors, the right healthcare providers that fit your plan, that's not going to, you know, Cardinal Health has implemented AI into their platform. So these are all like really, really great uses of it from a consumer support standpoint.
Yeah, I'm seeing that a lot right now is there's bots on every website, whether it's an exercise app, like you said, or Tesla. I do see a lot of, you know, quick help with AI instead of calling in and waiting and being transferred. People are trying to organize calls better or, you know, help get people to the right people using AI. So that's, I love that. I didn't even realize Tesla was doing that as much. You know, I think of like how it's shaping people's preferences and how people are using it. I think I heard a statistic, and I don't know if this is correct, but 70% of the US population is using AI in some fashion, whether it's ChatGPT or they're using it at their company. And so when I think of AI, I'm wondering like how it's going to be evolving, like even just this year. Typically in tech, we talk like, you know, 1 to 5 years, but AI seems to be evolving so much faster than, you know, since I've been in tech. How do you see it shaping behavior preferences and maybe challenges that go along with that?
So I think from a consumer standpoint, what we're going to see is because AI is really going to focus in on hyper-personalization. You know, from a marketing standpoint, there's 9 touch points with a customer generally in the marketing life cycle. And that's with any product, any service, right? Well, you know, the purpose of AI is to be smarter, to be more efficient, to be more effective. And that's hyper-personalization. So, I mean, as you can see, like if you have a Netflix subscription, which I think just about everybody in the free world does, you know, the personalizations have gotten better and better. And that's because of AI technology in there. And what does that do, right? It saves you time from like just scrolling their vast content network. Well, think about if you can get that level of personalization in everything that you're doing, think about how much time you're saving. I mean, I kind of liken this to what I saw kind of emerge with in media with streaming services, right? One of the beauty of streaming services is they don't have commercials, right? That was one of the vast beauties. Like I have a 19-year-old son, and a couple of years ago when he was a teenager and still at home, not in college yet, I had gotten a Hulu subscription, and I gotten the Hulu subscription through my phone provider. So it actually did have commercial breaks, right? So it wasn't straight streaming. And that was free through my phone provider. Well, he turned around without me knowing and upgraded it to the non-commercial version, which was like $60 a month. And so I see this show up and I'm like, whoa, what is this? I'm not paying $60 a month for Hulu. And I asked him, I said, did you change? And he was like, yeah, because I can't handle commercials, Mom. That just wastes my time. And that's kind of when that hit me that like, oh my gosh, the generation, our generation currently of our kids, you know, the Gen Zs and Gen Alphas, they don't know what it's like to wait to see something. And that's honestly what made streaming so palatable for the masses, is because it is a time saver. It is. You know, it is a continuous flow of information. And that's what we're seeing with AI. It's giving us continuous flow of information that's perfectly suited for us, right? Like how fabulous would it be to go to Amazon? And yeah, you still got your search bar up there so you can find whatever you want, but based on your last browsing history, and it's very accurate. Like this is what you bought in the last 30 days and you're likely to need refills on it. This is what, you know, this is some of the content you've absorbed from Amazon Prime. And, you know, here's some stuff that's very similar, and it's not in disparate locations, but it's all on your personal portal.
Yeah. It's convenient, right? It's convenient because it's a lot of, like you mentioned, it's a lot of cycles to remember. I may be out of a prescription or, you know, shampoo or whatever you get every 30 days. And it's, you know, in our busy lives, sometimes we tend to forget those kind of things. And it is amazing to use those tools that can remind us when we're off doing more important things. I know I heard recently at a conference I went to where some of the employees at this hotel were inputting, you know, please help me craft a apology to Jane Doe at 123 Main Street about how we did X, Y, and Z. So I know it's really great to use the tool, but also it's really important to make sure we're aware of the information we're telling the AI tool to do and the private, you know, PII data that we're putting into it. Cause there are some, you know, issues with privacy when we put, you know, our pertinent information into some of these tools. So how do you think that plays, you know, into, you know, the advancement of AI and businesses, like educating their people on how to and what to put in, you know, these tools? Any thoughts on how, from a compliance and regulatory standpoint, from PII data?
Yeah, so I think that's really going to depend on the organization and what they do in terms of, like if they're national or if they're international, first and foremost, right? Because the privacy laws differ throughout the world, and there's lots of compliances in place that you have to abide by if you do, right? If you do work, if you know, if you're selling products or goods in international markets, because other countries do have stronger PII restrictions than we do in the US, right? And so, you know, what I'm seeing a lot of times are organizations are first and foremost, if they don't have a handle on it, that they're locking the use of AI in the corporation. So they're not going to have that. But then two, again, it goes back to what I was saying earlier. Like, you have to understand which national regulations touch the business that you're in. So if you're an international company, you do business with China, you do business in the United States, you need to understand what they're stating as the minimal regulatory policy. And then you need to follow that, right? Don't try to reinvent a wheel because you might be missing something. Additionally, until you're sure, AI is not going anywhere, and you're not going to miss the bandwagon if you don't jump on it this year, right? Now, I could be saying something different in 5 years, right? Because it is a rapidly expanding and changing technology. But there's something to be said for people who observe and then go into play, right? You can learn from others' mistakes instead of making a mistake yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been hearing different metrics about how businesses are using AI. We're able to, you know, catch more of this, or, you know, give our employees an hour back in their day. Have you heard any like specific metrics tied to AI and productivity in the workplace?
In terms of productivity, no, not yet. And I've heard more effectiveness metrics, like I was giving you the example, and I think education is one of the really big ones, right? I've heard, you know, that students have become, you know, and there have been some pilot studies across, you know, some K through 12 schools that are utilizing AI tools like Socratic and, you know, Chegg, to help the students and not be like, and not be a no, you can't use it, but actually utilizing them to help them prepare better. And we've heard, you know, there is data, preliminary data to support that they are effective users. They're effective, suppliers of, you know, quality information to students. So, and that's what we want, right? I mean, we're educating our students. We want to make them smarter. We want to make them more effective. And so utilizing AI in that type of arena, I think can be very, very beneficial. And that's where I'm hearing some of those more effectiveness metrics. In terms of productivity metrics, I know some teachers personally who have experimented with utilizing AI like ChatGPT or even Bing, right? Just putting it into the Bing search bar, to help them refine their lesson plans. And they have found that immensely helpful, and put in some really creative things to help engage the students. And so that's, you know, because it's, you're literally taking into account probably 50,000 brains, right? Versus two brains or three brains. So I would think that that would be a strong effectiveness or productivity metric, because, you know, one of the things, I have some close friends that are teachers, and they tell me like lesson planning is probably like the long tail in their day.
Yeah. Now I'm curious, which one do you think is the best for those type of things? So if you want to, let's say you want to clean up, you know, you're writing a 1,000-word article and you want to make sure your grammar is right, or maybe expanding it to 1,200 words. Is there one that you go to typically?
So one that I've used typically, and like my kids use it a lot because of school and everything, is Grammarly, right? Grammarly, because that's also embedded in most Microsoft applications, or it embeds easily with Microsoft applications. Most kids are writing on Word. And what I like about Grammarly, it doesn't write out your information for you. You have to write it and then it will improve it. I find for business facing information, like if you just want to do like an email and you're not quite sure how to word it, you know, ChatGPT is kind of fun to ask, like, how do I write this and make me sound empathetic if you're not a naturally empathetic person, right? Or, you know, how do I sound directive? Or, you know, like I've played around with stuff like that and ChatGPT's popped out some pretty cool stuff, like some pretty cool, concise emails that sound the way I want them to sound, not the way I personally would say it. And then, you know, another one that can be really helpful to help kids think further, and I know it's kind of big in schools, is Socratic and then Chegg. Chegg's another big one, so.
Yeah, I keep saying I'm going to take one question and ask all, you know, the top five tools and see what responses I get. It'd kind of be a neat experience to take the same question and plug it into different tools and see what kind of content it you know, outputs. And I keep saying I'm going to do that, Selena, and I haven't done it yet. So it is on my to-do list to try one question. And see how it comes out. Just kind of two questions, two final questions. One, maybe the top ways that an employee could use AI from your perspective. And then just maybe secondly, be like, how can just, you know, regular people, moms, people that are, you know, looking to find a good cookie recipe, how can just outside of the workday, how can people use AI in their day-to-day, kind of A and B?
Yeah. So how can employees use AI? Because it, again, it is so new. Honestly, I would use it for an exploratory manner. What are some of the things that you just deal with on a day-to-day basis that you need some assistance with? So some people have trouble managing everything they have to do in their day. And so you see lots of productivity tools and apps that are out there, right? So there's like one called Motion, and that's AI powered. And it's about like helping you get your calendar all in order and everything. But, you know, you could also just ask ChatGPT what are some ways that I can, you know, improve my time and my day and see what it comes back with. Like, again, so it's exploratory, figuring out the right way to ask the question to get the answer you're seeking. And then from, what was the second question?
So just from your work, like an employee, and then your day-to-day personal life.
Yeah. And so then from a personal life perspective, like what are those things that you're really interested in that you just don't have a lot of time for? You know, like I know I like to cook. I really do, but I don't have a whole ton of time to cook. And so I'm always trying to find the best recipes, but I'm also time constrained. So, you know, I've done Google search, especially like in 2020. Okay, what is a good 35-minute meal that I can prepare for my family? And, you know, I found a website called 35-minute meals or 30-minute meals. And, you know, they had recipes in there that I did follow, but I don't know if they were the best. I mean, they were good. And, but so ChatGPT, because of the sheer power of the network that it has and all the nodes that it has basically spidering out, like literally asking it that question, I feel more confident in the search result it's going to give me, because it's likely going to give me a recipe that should take me 35 minutes, but it might not be from a website that says 35-minute meals.
Yeah, I agree. I've used it so many times for recipes because you never know, like, are people paying to, you know, to get their stuff boosted to the top, or is it really that great of a recipe, right?
right. And the positive side right now, I haven't seen that. I have to be honest. I have to do a little digging and see if in ChatGPT if they do that, right? But we know with, you know, most blogs and most search engine results, right, you can pay to play because they have figured out ways to monetize that technology. Since we're still in the infancy stages of AI, I don't quite know if consumer facing AI has that embedded in it. I don't think it does yet.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't looked myself either. Any final thoughts or anything that you want to leave with the listeners before we close out?
You know, I guess just really be open-minded. Like, this can be a real benefit in our day-to-day lives. And it's not hype. I've been in emerging technologies my entire career, which has spanned over 25 years. And this is honestly the most robust, most exciting technology I've seen come to bear. So I think we're going to see a lot of really good things coming up. And I'm excited for what it could do, because I don't know about you, but being a working mom and wife, you know, I'm always pressed for time, and things I can do to make my day more efficient and effective are at the top of my list. And so if I can utilize the technology to do so, then I'm right there for it.
You nailed it. I think that's the number one reason I use AI is more efficiency and more productivity in my day. And I think that's what I'm looking for, like you said, is faster ways to make food, faster ways to get places, faster ways to do things, so I could have more time in my day to do the things that I never get to do on my to-do list. In closing, Selena, thank you. First of all, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you. I appreciate your time and the Absolutely. Thoughts that you've shared with our listeners. How do we get in touch with you? Is there a way that our listeners can connect with you if something resonated with them here today?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am on LinkedIn, Selena Accardo. Just send me a message and I'm happy to accept it. And if you want to have a conversation, I'm always open for those. I'm always looking to network and discuss things openly with other like-minded professionals. So absolutely, Selena Accardo. And I do follow the Executive Connect blog myself. So hopefully I'll be, coming across some other listeners in some of the chats on there.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for being here today. And that's the Executive Connect podcast.
You've been listening to the Executive Connect podcast. If you have questions or ideas on how to bring leadership to the next level, email us at executiveconnectpodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to subscribe so you can catch every new episode. Until next time.